So, we're continuing with our discussion of politics and prophecy, but namely the role of an investigation, really, of Jewish political tradition. Last week, and he's not here right now, but last week there was a question that was asked, and I want to use to kind of jump into today's discussion. The question was asked, who cares? Who cares about separation of church and state? Who cares about political tradition? Why is it exciting? Why is it interesting? And I tried to articulate an answer, but I want to go back today and begin our discussion by articulating two separate answers, and they're not my own, but I hope you'll will shed some light on really the core issue of this series. It's nice to be discussing political tradition, Jewish political tradition, and political philosophy, and the Rambam. Okay, it's very nice. But what relevance does it have to us? Why? What does it inform us about? So, I want to really begin our discussion with this. I think this is a very appropriate introduction to today's shiur, and to the, again, to the course as a whole. But the first answer that I really think is applicable here is the answer by Rav Soloveitchik. The Rav writes in Halachic Man a very famous and well-known approach that, to me, was very much defines what we're trying to do here, and was the approach that I attempted to articulate last week. But the Rav makes it so much better. So let's see what he has to say. The Rav says that, it's your first source, when Halachic Man approaches reality, he comes with his Torah, given to him from Sinai, in hand. He orients himself to the world by means of fixed statutes and firm principles. Okay. He continues that the essence of the halacha, which was received from God, consists in creating an ideal world and cognizing the relationship between that ideal world and our concrete environment in all its visible manifestations and underlying structures. Again, cognizing the relationship between our ideal world, the halacha, the tradition, what our chachamim, what our forebears have to tell us, and our concrete environment and its visible manifestations and underlying structures and reality. We have, on the one hand, political systems with structures, with manifestations, and on the other hand, we have a political tradition of our own. And the Rav's telling us that the job of halachic man, and the essence, he says, of halacha, is to be able to approach reality through this lens of halacha, and find out where they interact, find out what they have to say about each other, find out what the halacha has to say about the reality. He goes on, there's no phenomenon, entity, or object in this concrete world which the a priori halacha does not approach with its ideal standard. There's nothing that halacha doesn't have a model for. When a halachic man comes across a spring bubbling quietly, he already possesses a fixed, a priori relationship with this real phenomenon, the complex of laws regarding the halachic construct of a spring. So he says the same thing. If you continue towards the bottom of the source here, he says the same thing about a sunset. We imagine looking out over a beautiful sunset and enjoying its beauty, appreciating the different hues of its color. And he says that when a halachic man looks to the western horizon and sees the fading rays of the setting sun, or to the eastern horizon and sees the light of the first light of the dawn and the glowing rays of the rising sun, he doesn't just see the beauty. He doesn't just see the colors. But he also knows that this sunset or sunrise imposes upon him a new obligations and commandments. He knows that there's relevance to what he's seeing, to the reality that he has, that he's interacting with, and the halacha that he has within him, the halacha that he carries with him. Dawn and sunrise obligate him to fulfill those commandments that are performed during the day. So that's the first approach. The first approach is that of halachic man. That just as halachic man approaches the sunrise with his halachic glasses on, just as he approaches the spring, and indeed all constructs of reality, all things that he finds in this world, So too, our goal here is to be approaching political systems, approaching our political structures, and understanding them in the light of halacha, understanding what halacha obligates us, what halacha says about them, and understanding the contextual intersections between the halacha and what we have here. So that's the first answer to the question. The second answer is, perhaps more practical, in a not in a halachic sense, but in a very real sense, as you'll see in a second. Your second source is from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on February 15th, 1999, and I'm sure you could open any number of newspaper articles and find the same sort of story. We'll discuss it in a second, but a couple months ago, we saw a similar story when with Haredim reacting to the opening of a parking garage on Shabbos. We'll see the story in a second. The title here is Protest Dividing Jews Remain Civil. So the article says that the black-hatted ultra-Orthodox streamed down the hills of this ancient capital yesterday as throngs of secular Israelis in jeans and sweatshirts walked in another direction. The two groups formed a visual tableau of distinct and different Jewish cultures living ever more uneasily in the same state. In the first bold paragraph, soldiers ringed the Supreme Court building and sharpshooters stood on its roof after a week in which top rabbis had waged bitter attacks on the court, calling the Chief Justice an anti-Semitic oppressor and an enemy of Judaism. Angered by a series of decisions that recognized the religious rights of non-Orthodox Jews, mainly conservative and reform, and ended an exemption from military service for many Orthodox Jews, the religious establishment wants Orthodox rabbis included in any civil court matters having to do with Judaism. We're not talking here about halachic man anymore. We're not talking about here the approach of an individual when he comes across a political structure and wants to know about it. We're talking here about when the concrete hits the, when the rubber hits the concrete. We're talking about civil protest in the state of Israel that erupts with, unfortunately, some frequency regarding the issues of separation of church and state. The protesters, we're told, in the third paragraph, were protesting what they considered the Israeli Supreme Court's infringement of their religious rights. And again, we saw the same thing. We saw terrible rioting several months ago in Meir Shearim in reaction to a court decision to open a parking lot for use on Shabbos. And these are very fundamental questions about separation of church and state, about the role of civil courts in, as opposed to halachic ruling, that really come to the fore in the state of Israel, come to the fore in very much the questions about what the state of Israel, how it functions, what it's about, and how its citizens define their relationship with the government. I have a question. No question. There's no question that this is an issue that is one of the defining issues in the state of Israel, and it's one that will come up in almost every sphere of Israeli public activity. Shemitah, you're going to have this issue come up. Shabbos, you're going to divorce. Everything. No question. No question about it. Absolutely. These are fundamental questions that we all should. My. Your point is very well taken. My argument is that we should all be trying to struggle, grapple with these issues because they're fundamental. It's not just the black hats, Haredim who are rioting. They may have reached a certain conclusion, but what I want to try to present here is the tools and the framework for us to reach our own conclusions about these issues, for us to be able to approach these situations with our own set of glasses, if you will, halachic glasses, if you will. So just briefly, we'll just finish the highlighted areas of this article. So the article tells us that the protest was organized by more than a dozen groups that see the attacks on the civil justice system as threatening a pillar of Israel's 50-year-old democracy, the separation of synagogue and state that has been established by judicial precedent under Israel's British-like unwritten constitution. Continue, we're told that this rally was the largest gathering in the streets since the November 1995 assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin by an Orthodox Jewish extremist. So, again, we're really dealing with very concrete, very realistic, very not only relevant, but there's a certain immediacy to these questions as they're being fought out, as they're being argued, as they're being discussed, literally on the streets of the State of Israel. So we're going to begin now our discussion of separation of church and state in Jewish thought. And as I said, we begin by really first looking, as halachic man does, by first looking at the structures that we have before us. So we'll just take a look at the, for two sources, just quickly to discuss the issue within the American civil context, and then bring it into the thought of the Rambam and the Ran. Your third source is, you're probably familiar with it, it's the United States Constitution, it's the First Amendment. It says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It's famous, it's the Establishment Clause. It gives us the freedom of religion. It gives us, it goes on to give us the freedom of expression, of speech, of assembly. It's a pillar of our nation and our political principles. Tell me for a second how you interpret, we'll do a little exercise in constitutional law here. Tell me for a second how you would interpret this this amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It's not called the separation of church and state clause. It's called the establishment clause.
Well, it depends. It's what? The way I'm reading it, it just means that it can't be an established religion in the country.
Exactly. It means that there can't be an officially sanctioned and established religion in the country.
Even though there is.
Even though there is. Okay, right. And that's what I want to get to, even though there is. We tend to view the issue of church and state as a very black and white issue in political thought. You know, we talk about separation of church and state, and we assume generally that there has to be a separation. There has to be a complete separation. There is state on one end of the spectrum and religion on the other. And they don't meet anywhere in between. The reality is that this amendment has really come to be interpreted in a lot of different ways. Some ways stricter, some ways really saying that there has to be an absolute divide. And as you said, some ways that people find ways to, you know, bend this amendment a little bit. There is an established religion in our country, you argue. That's the argument of our fourth source. This is it's an article that if you have a free weekend, I really recommend picking it up. It's a very long article, but it very much serves as the basis of this shiur. My guy named Elazar Nachalon in the Touro Law Review, and the article is titled Structural Models of Religion and State in Jewish and Democratic Political Thought, The Challenge for Israel. It's an article that first tackles very much in depth the issue of church and state in the U.S., and then goes on very much in depth to analyze the halakha, the Jewish tradition, and he really does a great job. But he notes right away that the American jurisprudence of the religion clauses is described by Benning as suffering from deep incoherence. It's not so clear-cut as we might think. You know, we see in the news, and really, just yesterday, if anybody saw in the Times, there was an article about, I was preparing this year, and I opened up the newspaper, and of course, there's an article about separation of church and state, and it's really one of those very wonderful moments. But this is an issue that comes up all the time. And it comes up in different contexts in different ways. On the one hand, we know, it goes on, Indeed, it's difficult, if not impossible, to reconcile the prohibition on invocation and benediction prayers as part of formal school graduation ceremonies with the permissibility of opening legislature sessions with prayers. On the one hand, the Supreme Court doesn't allow prayer in schools, and on the other hand, Congress opens up with a prayer. It continues, it's hard to bring enough together the prohibition on the posting of Ten Commandments in public school classrooms and the permissibility of the decoration of the United States Supreme Court chamber with a representation of Moses holding the Ten Commandments. There's a tension here. There's a tension in our society that bubbles up quite frequently between the, on the one hand, idea of a strict separation, and on the other hand, the reality of somewhat of a balance. So just as a very brief introduction, I want to suggest that it's an important point for the discussion in Israel. The discussion in Israel is predicated, the tension in Israel is predicated upon the understanding, the belief, that democracy is incompatible with religion. You can't have a democratic system if you want to have a religious system. That's the understanding. The understanding is based on the First Amendment. Right? They say, okay, we want to establish a democratic system like the United States of America. Well, what does that require? Numero uno, open up the U.S. Constitution. It requires separation of church and state. So the tension in Israel is based on the fact they think it's not possible. They think that there's no reconciliation that's possible between state and government in a democratic system. And therefore, you have to fall to either side of the divide. You have to say, I'm either going to reject democracy, I'm either going to reject government, or I'm going to reject religion. And those two sides, those are the two sides that we have battling in the streets. And the point here is that the reality is much more complex, and there is a range of possible compromises, and there's a spectrum of possible models that incorporate religion and democracy within the government. So he really just will do just a couple quick lines just to give you the highlights. Analyzing the basic ideas that play a role in the discourse shows that a range of models is quite wide. The non-liberal theories do not conceptually preclude the state's involvement with a particular doctrine. Again, he's going to earn on each of the theories in that hold about church and state. So he says, on the one hand, there's a theory that doesn't necessarily indicate that there has to be a separation. The remaining arguments support a very wide range of models, from non-coercive establishment of a particular religion to a separation and maybe even a moderate hostility towards religion. The theory of political liberalism basically leads to a model of state neutrality towards religion, although special characteristics of religion might lead to the adoption of other models such as separation or accommodation. Although the Establishment Clause seems to rule out models with a lot of proximity between religion and state. We thought that our first gut reaction to the First Amendment was you can't have church and state together. He says it does not necessarily require the normative ideas which underline the theoretical discourse. There's still a lot of room, there's wiggle room in this system. And that explains why we have so much incoherence. It explains why the Supreme Court rules differently and seemingly in contradictory ways on these issues. Because there's wiggle room, there's room for interpretation, there's room for balance and compromise. So on the one hand, the American system is not what we necessarily think. The American system has within it room for flexibility. Now we'll go on to the Rambam. The Rambam would argue in many ways, again, has come to define the argument here. He's in many ways come to define the debate between, in our article at least, between the Haredim protesting the Supreme Court and the secular counter-protests. Again, if the conception of the American democratic system is that it requires a separation, the Rambam no doubt requires a unity. He sees no differentiation between separation of church and state. Let's see why. So the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim first and foremost tells us why we need a government. We'll connect the Rambam in a second to our discussion from last week. But we saw the Rambam, again, requires the need for a king. We'll see how that fits into his understanding. He tells us in the Moreh Nevuchim, Chelek Bet Perek Mem, says, Kfar Yitba'er Tachlit HaBi'ur, Ki Adam Midini B'Teva, V'Shetiv'o Yiyem Mitkabetz. He says the person is a social being. Man is by nature a social being, and his nature, his tendency, his natural inclination is to establish political connections, establish political ties and institutions. That's the first observation the Rambam makes about the nature of man. The second, in the next line, with the rov ha-harkava b'zehamin, ha-yahevdol rav ben ishav, ad she'efshar shelo timtse shnei anashim maskimim b'min b'minei hamidot. Says, human nature number two, besides the fact that we're social and we like to establish connections between each other, human nature number two is that we argue. We're different from one another. We have different viewpoints and different beliefs than one another. And it seems that there's a contradiction. There's a fundamental contradiction in human nature. On the one hand, we like to get together and to have groups and have a lot of fun together. But on the other hand, we're always going to end up fighting. We're always going to end up disagreeing with each other. We have all these different opinions. No two faces are alike. No two opinions are alike. And therefore, what are we going to do? How are we going to reconcile these contradictions? So he goes on. So he says, therefore, in your fourth line, excuse me, Tzarich el ha-kibbutz tzorech hechrachi. Ei efshar b'shum panim she'ishalem ha-kibbutz ever be manhig be'achrech yishe'er pu'ulotayim. Says you need a ruler. You need somebody to make sure that they all have the same opinions, to adjudicate between them, to resolve their differences, to smooth out their differences, right? So he says the need for political, for a leader, for a ruler, is fundamental to human nature. Because we like to have groups, but we argue a lot, so therefore the leader of our groups must be able to resolve our differences. Must be able to he says, Yishe'er pulotayim, Yichok pulot umidot yasum kulam achok echad tamid, to make one gold standard for everybody. To make sure everybody follows the same rules, and the same thoughts, and the same traditions, and the same minhagim. We need a ruler to establish uniformity. Because otherwise, our civil structures are going to break down. What's the nature of this ruler? And I think you have an idea right off the bat. What are the ways in which the leader is going to smooth everybody out? What is the gold standard he's going to establish for everybody? What is the rule he's going to make everybody follow? What's the rule? He's going to make everybody follow the true rule. He's going to make everybody follow Hashem. So he says, yeah, we have, everybody has different opinions, and that's, you know, it might lead them to different religious beliefs. So therefore, we need a leader who's going to establish the religious beliefs for everybody, who's going to make everybody the same. He tells us this in the Mishneh Torah, which is really the complement, it's the natural conclusion to what he lays out for us in the Moreh Nevuchim. So in Perek Dalet, Halacha Gim, Halacha Yud, of the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam says, of Hilchot Malachim, the Rambam says, what does the king have to do? What's the nature of the kingship? Uvichol yiyu ma'asav l'shem shamayim. V'tiyem migamato u'machshavto v'harim dat emet. His entire goal, his entire thought, his entire drive has to be to raise up the true religion, the true belief, the one truth. That's the role of the Melech. So combine them. On the one hand, we have differences. On the one hand, we have a need to establish political ties. And the Rambam answers this, solves this contradiction by saying, okay, so the ruler we establish has to govern over us, has to establish the norms that we're going to behave by, and those are going to be the rules of Hashem, the rules of God. So first and foremost, right off the bat, you can see where he's going here. This is not a separation of church and state. This is a unity between church and state. The state is the hand of God. The state ensures that the rule of God, that the belief in God, will be uniform, will be uplifted, will be established, taught, and inspired to everybody. And therefore, you'll tell me, why does the king understand? We saw a tension last week between the need to establish a king and the question about divine kingship, and the tension between divine kingship and divine sovereignty versus civil sovereignty. So we saw the Rambam understands that there's no tension. The Rambam understands that there's a mitzvah. There's a very important mitzvah to establish a king. Why is that? How does that fit in? How does that resolve the contradiction between divine sovereignty and civil sovereignty? In the Rambam's model, divine sovereignty is civil sovereignty. In the Rambam's model, the king is the hand of God. So, when the Bnei Yisrael come to Shmuel and say, we need a king, there's no problem with that request. There's no affront to God. There's no rejection of God in that request. Because the king that they're asking for is going to ensure that Hashem is the one king. The king that the Bnei Yisrael are asking for is going to ensure that everybody follows in the ways of Hashem. So there's really no contradiction. There's no battle. There's no problem with the question of government versus kingdom.
It just doesn't work. Utopian times of the king, it just didn't work out. Because David and Solomon.
So your point is that practically it's not possible.
Right. I think it's two different things.
In what way?
Because I think it's the priesthood. It was the priests who really, in the Sanhedrin later on, who set down the laws, and not the civil courts.
Amazing. You're saying it's not possible to really have a unity. Because on the one, we have the Shoftim, we have the priests, and they are the religious authorities, and the king's separate. The king's a civil, he has nothing to do with them. You're saying that's your understanding of how the political structure should be?
How I see it works.
That's the way you see how it works, 100%. And the Ran agrees with you. The Ran is going to offer us a very important model. And it's exactly what you just said. We'll see in a second, but let's just continue for a second with this model of the Rambam as a complete unity. Complete unity, there's no separation of church and state. Again, the state is the church. The state is the hand of Hashem.
The question is
in the Rambam's model, what need do you have for a Sanhedrin? In the Rambam's model, let the king be the one who rules. He's going to rule according to halacha in all ways. He's always going to be halachic. He's always going to be interested in establishing divine rule and divine law. So what do you need a Sanhedrin for? Let him be everything combined in one. It's a great question. And it's a very good question. It's a very good question. The reality is we had a Sanhedrin that was separate from the king. So your points are that historically we always had somewhat of a separation. And your points are very important and they're very sensitive to the realities that we experience. Because the Rambam, everybody reads the Rambam. Everybody has a Mishnah Torah on their shelf. So when you want to, when you want to talk about what's the most popular, what's most well known in contemporary society, the Rambam is very accessible. I would argue that when you see throngs of people who argue that there has to be a unity between church and state, that we can't have a situation where the state defies halacha, it's because they know the Rambam. It's because most people have read the Rambam. I'm saying most people who have a stance on this issue. If you want to go into you know, walking to the rally in 1999 in front of the Supreme Court building, and, you know, tap somebody on the shoulder and ask them, why are you protesting the Supreme Court? I bet you a lot of them would say, well, the Rambam tells us that you can't have a separation of church and state. You can't have a situation where the state defies halacha. So my point is, the Rambam has been accepted as the norm. The Rambam has been accepted as the mainstream viewpoint. Your arguments are that, well, hey, this is not the way it always was. This is not the way we had our structures in the time of the Malachim, in the time of the Sanhedrin. And your points are very sensitive, and I think your points are so sensitive that they're being missed. If only all the people protesting, throwing stones, and fighting against police in the streets of Yerushalayim thought for a second about the fact that, wait a second, we seem to have a separation in history. We seem to have the Sanhedrin and the king that were separate entities. They wouldn't have such a... I would imagine that they wouldn't have such a... they wouldn't be so quick to fight against the government, because they would see room for flexibility. They would see room for...
Because in Israel, I think it's a different situation.
How so?
The Haredi community, as my understanding, already doesn't like the government to begin with. Anything that the government is going to try to establish, they're going to fight against it.
Exactly. So they have a... But the truth is that it's one of the same, because if you trace the origins of the question of why they have a problem with the government, if you read about the Naturi Karta, if you read some of their viewpoints, and if you read some of their ideas about messianism, they argue that the reason they don't like the government to begin with is because they argue you can't possibly have a secular government. It's not possible. And therefore, they reject the entire legitimacy of secular rule in Israel. They argue that the only government, the only return to the land of Israel that's possible is under the framework of the Rambam. Let's go on in the Rambam. We'll just skip ahead for just a second. The Rambam, source 10, says, "Im ya'amod melech mibeit David, hoge b'torah ve'osek b'mitzvot, k'David aviv, k'fi Torah shebechav v'shebal peh." If you have somebody who rises, he's from the lineage of Beit David, and he follows the mitzvot that are written in the Torah and in the oral tradition, v'yikofet kol Yisrael v'ylech ba v'lechazek, I think it should be v'lechazek ba, and he upholds and he forces everybody to follow the true religion, v'yilachem milchamot Hashem, harizeh v'cheskat shu Mashiach. That's Mashiach. Mashiach is when you have a king who comes to rule over people in the state of Israel, who is both the civil and divine ruler in one. He's a king who establishes halachic rule. That's Mashiach. And that's why the elements of Haredi society, specifically the Torah character, reject government to begin with. See, the only return, we say, we understand... We oftentimes say, you know, Reshit Mechad Golatenu. We say in our Tfilah, Neshom Min HaYisrael, Reshit Mechad Golatenu. We understand that there's some messianic quality in some way to the current manifestation of the state of Israel. But they reject it because they say it can't be. It can't be that you have a secular government. It can't be that you have a separation of church and state. And they're getting it from the Rambam. It's based on the Rambam. Their rejection of the government, their rejection, the protest of all the issues that are going on, their throwing of stones in the street is based on the Rambam. Because if you understand that Mashiach is only the manifestation of a king who rules, who establishes the, you know, halachic law, and if you understand that the role of a king, the goal and the duty of a civil ruler is to rule with Hashem's law and to establish Hashem's law, well then you have no room for a secular government. You have no option to accept the legitimacy of a secular government. So it is literally the core of the issue. It's the core of their belief. So the Rambam.
Rambam, though, or Richard, specific groups there, the Haredi.
It's a good question. No, it's a good question. The question is it? So, if you look in their writings, they obviously draw on other sources as well. Yoel Teitelbaum, who's one of the forebears of the Torah Karta movement, drew on many sources. Some of the sources they draw on is a famous Gemara about three shvuot. There were three promises that the Bnei Israel weren't allowed to, break down the walls and various. And they use that as an argument as well. But he very much also draws on the Rambam, because the mission of the Rambam is laying out in halachic terms the fact that your civil ruler, cannot be secular. Your civil ruler has to be religious. And therefore, you combine them. Combine the Gemara about the three Shavuot that says Bnei Israel can't go back into the land of Israel unless Hashem brings them, with the understanding of the Rambam's view of messianism and the Rambam's view of the role of government, and you have a model, you have a structure that completely rejects any option for secular rule, completely rejects any option for the validity of secular government. And again, it's the very basis of these tensions, of these arguments, and these battles. So the idea is that we need to find another source, another idea, another model, because we so very much need it. Because right now, the divide is so painful that we're experiencing. We have literally, as we see, we have literally battles being waged in the streets about this issue, and the need for some flexibility, the need for some reconciliation, for some new models, is so great, because we have to find ways to relieve this tension. There have to be ways to relieve this tension that we have in Israeli society that is the number one issue in Israeli society. You talk about war and you talk about the external threats, but this is a fundamental internal threat about the divisions that we have in Israeli society. And they're very real, and it's very important for us then to try to find other models besides the Rambam.
Let me just ask a question. Is there something in halacha that would allow for that parking lot?
Say it again?
Is there something within halacha that would allow
for the parking lot?
For the parking lot being open on Shabbos.
So we'll...
In terms of trying to grab it halachically. And I'm not sure.
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I would argue that, I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I would argue that it's not really a halachic, we can remove it from a halachic argument. Because, on the one hand, in the eyes of halacha, we can certainly see that there's room to say, absolutely not. There's no way, opening a parking lot, driving the challah Shabbos, you can't do it. Okay? You and I, we're all halachic observing Jews. You're not allowed to, no question. But it's not really a halachic issue. The question really is, what about for the other people? Because the parking garage is not for the Haredim. Of course the Haredim can't drive it. The question is, what about people who are not Jewish? What about people who are not Shomer Torah? And this gets into a relationship with those people, and it's going to be another section in our series about our tolerance for non-observant Jews, for non-Jews, how they fit into our system. The question, so it's less of a halachic issue and more of an issue of how do we relate to these people? Can we acknowledge the fact that they're not shomer halacha? Can we accept the fact that they're going to be driving on Shabbos and therefore enact laws within our own that are legitimate in our own system to accommodate their system? So the halachic answer is probably not, but my point is that it's not really a halachic question, it's this question. It's a question of, is there flexibility within our system to allow for accommodation of non-observance? And we'll get into that in a later series. We'll get into a later series. Okay, very quickly, because we're short on time, but let's see the Ron. The Ron gives us a different train of thought. the Ran is in its source 11, and it's from the Drashot HaRan. The Ran had a couple of Drashot. He gave some sermons, and they were compiled famously into his Drashot. I believe there's 12 of them. This is the 11th. He talks about political rule. Note what he says. He gives, as the Rambam does, he gives a human nature reason for why we need political order. What is it? Yaduahu, he says, first word. Yaduahu ki hamina enoshi tzarich l'shofet sheishvot bein pratav. It's known that humanity needs rule, needs boundaries, needs a ruler. Sheim lo kein, ish et re'eu chayim b'la'o. If not, everybody's going to literally eat each other. There'll be anarchy. V'yiha olam nishchat. We'll all be destroyed if there's no ruler. This is a fundamental concept in political science, by the way. This idea of anarchy. And this is the fundamental concept in realism. He's 1315 to 1380. It's amazing. What does he say? Every nation needs this political order. Ad she'amar ha-chacham, to the extent that the chacham, I'll let you guess who that is. The chacham said, shekat ha-listim, hiskimu b'nehem ha-yosher, that even a group of vandals, even a group of robbers, has an order among them. Who is the chacham? Who is he quoting? He's quoting Plato. He's quoting Plato, but it's also, Hobbes writes about this. Hobbes says the same thing. If we don't have political order, we're going to all kill each other. Well, if we don't have rules, if we don't have boundaries, we're literally going to all get to each other's throat. And this was the fundamental reason, by the way, for the establishment of the United Nations, for the League of Nations. In the aftermath of World War I and World War II, they said, we would all just, we can't let this happen again. We can't let us all try to kill each other again. So we have to establish some order. We have to establish somebody to rule over us. And it's going to be the United Nations. Whether it works, whether it doesn't, different question. But that's his point. What's the logical conclusion of this argument? Again, the Rambam said that we all have different ideas, we all have different beliefs, and the logical conclusion was therefore our leader needs to make our beliefs all the same. The Ran says that the reason we need rule, the reason we need leadership is because we're all going to fight each other, we're all going to kill each other if not. So what's the logical conclusion? Why do we need a civil government to impose order? Not for a belief system, not because we have to all have the same ideas, but because we just all have to be safe. We all have to be able to not be afraid of one another, that somebody's going to try to kill us. We need to have laws that say you can't kill, and if you do, you're going to get thrown in jail. So that's, and you see right away, based on this basis, from this yisod, you can get into a much different model. You can get into a model that says, well, civil law is necessary to ensure safety, to ensure order. What people think, what people do, what people believe, that's a separate realm. And we'll see, that fits very well into your models. Your models of, on the one hand, shoftim and priests and a Sanhedrin to rule, and on the other hand, a civil authority to make sure we don't destroy one another. So he goes on, and we'll just read, we'll see how he says it specifically, source 12. In the same drasha, he says, Hashem yitbarach yiched kol echad mi'ayinim ha'ela l'kat miyuchedet. He divided each of these issues into a separate group. On the one hand, we have shoftim that have to be shofet mishpat tzedek, literally, to be shofet, what? Halacha, divine law. And on the other hand, continue to the bottom, u'mipnei ha-sidur ha-medini lo yishalem bezeh levado. So on the one hand, this is a separation. There's certainly a role for religion in government, and namely, it's to establish divine law. We have to have shoftim to establish divine law. But that's separate. It's a different office. It's a different branch of government. It's entirely different from the king, from the government, from the civil ruler, from the legislature. So we have a ruler on one hand who enforces order, and we have a court system on the other hand that imposes divine law, that imposes halacha. So we have in this model, it's not a complete separation. It's not that the king rules and there's no role for halacha at all. But there's flexibility here. There's flexibility, and what is that flexibility? It's very key. He says, "Mipnei she'asidur ha'medini lo yishalim bezeh levado." He says, the political order, the safety and security of all of us, the social order, cannot be ensured, cannot be established by halacha. And this is a very interesting statement. He says, halacha as a system cannot establish order. Why not? Let's just very quickly go on to source 13. Again, it's just a continuation. It's all the same source. Harei shaninu b'perek ha'yubotkin tanu rabbanan makirim atem oto. What happens? Somebody comes, you have Aidim that come in a court and they testify that person A, that Reuven killed Shimon. So what happens? The Beit Din has to say, makirim oto. Do you recognize this person, the defendant? Do you recognize Reuven? He tartem bo. Did you give him a tra? Kibel ha-tra. Did he accept your ha-tra? Hitir atzma lemita. Hemit big toch kidei dibor. Did he kill within? Toch kidei dibor after hearing the warning. We know this. This is very famous. There are limitations. If Reuven kills Shimon, it doesn't mean Beitin's going to throw him. We can kill him. There are only four instances in all of history that a Sanhedrin killed somebody. Because you need Hatra'ah. Not only do you need Hatra'ah, you have a whole complex issue of how the relationship between the Edim. And not only does you have to have the right relationship between the Edim and you have to have Hatra'ah, but also he has to have accepted your Hatra'ah and said, I don't care. He has to have accepted your warning. And not only does he have to accept your warning that this is wrong, he has to immediately kill the person. It's very hard to punish somebody in our halachic system. There's a built-in limitation to our court systems. They're not powerful. You can't just kill anybody. It's very rare that we were able to put somebody, to punish somebody. It's a radical statement. It's a fundamentally radical idea. Because halacha has all these rules. Halacha has don't kill. But it's not enough. It's not enough to establish order. And therefore, we have to have a king. We have to have a king that's going to say, okay, I have forensic evidence. I have the DNA. And even though that's not acceptable in Sanhedrin, I have the authority to kill him. I have the authority to punish him. So what does he say? Let's just finish in source 13 in the middle of the paragraph. Aval lo ya'anesh ha'over ki'im al zeh ha'derech. The sinner, the criminal won't be punished through the court system. Yifaseh ha'sidur ha'medini v'gamri, and therefore we're going to fall apart. Sheitirabishu ha'chfei damim, everybody's going to start murdering each other because they're not afraid of anything. So yaguru mina onesh, they're never going to be punished. V'lachein tzivah Hashem yibarach. So therefore we need a king. We need a king that's going to enforce order and enforce justice in the areas where halacha cannot. So the flexibility that he builds in is this question of what are the limitations of halacha? Where are the areas in which halacha cannot do what we need it to do? Well, the Ran argues one of the areas is in the area of capital punishment. It's just not strong enough. It's not harsh enough. And it won't deter anybody. So therefore we need a king. And the question is, the flexibility lies in how you understand the areas in where the halacha does not give you enough leeway. So perhaps you can make an argument. I'm not making this argument, but this is a theoretical direction that you could take the run. You could argue, well, halacha, by telling me that driving is not allowed on Shabbos, and therefore prohibiting the opening of the parking space, that's the mishpat tzedek. That's the true divine law. That's the truth. But that truth, just like the truth of capital cases in Sanhedrin, might cause breakdown in society. Might be such that it causes deep rifts in society. And everybody's going to be running at each other's throats. And therefore the halacha cannot, maybe, and I don't think this is the case, but it's a way that we could take the Ran and the flexibility to be able to have civil government rule in areas that there's overlap with halacha. Yes, halacha has rulings about murder, but the civil government could also rule about that. Yes, the halacha has rulings about Shabbos, but the civil government can make its own laws about that. And there's no contradiction, because you need both. So what is the role of the halacha? Is halacha relegated to a secondary role? It's arcane. It doesn't apply to us anymore. No, it's still relevant. It's still the mishpat tzedek. It's still the objective divine truth. But he's very pragmatic. He says, but practically, we need to have social order. We need to have political order. We can't have anarchy. And therefore, there have to be ways for the government, for a secular government, for a civil government, to be able to encroach upon the jurisdiction, upon the authority of the Sanhedrin. We're finished. Let's just see the last source where he says this much more clearly. He says, "Kama chukim she'ein lahem bevo klal b'tikun ha-seder ha-medini." On the one hand, we have chukim. We have statutes that have nothing to do with, whether or not you eat matzah has nothing to do with social order. It's fundamentally different from the prohibition of lo tzach, of don't kill. V'heim ha-siba atzmit kova l'chor ha-shef ha-elohi. They are the reason for Hashem's divine providence over us. By keeping them, we merit Hashem's presence. We merit Hashem's blessing. Kein mishpatei haTorah yesh lahem mevo gadol. Similarly, the mishpatim that we have, like lo tirtzach, also have intrinsic value. Ki ilu hem mishutafim bein sibot chol ha'inyan ha'elohi be'umanoteinu v'tikunu yan kibutzeinu. Just skip to the middle of the paragraph. Hashoftim ve'asanedrin haya tachlitam lishvot ha'am b'mishpat amiti tzodek be'atzmo she'imashech mimenu hidavek inyan ha'elohi banu. The reason we have these court systems and a Sanhedrin that have civil laws like don't kill and don't steal is because by enforcing those laws and by enforcing those statutes, by keeping them because they're Mishpat Hashem, by observing them because we know that they have a special significance as divine rule, as divine law, as divine will, that creates a relationship between us and Hashem. So even if those rules are ineffective at times, even if the commandment against lo tirtzach is not enough to ensure that there won't be murderers, and we need a civil ruler to come and enforce his own laws, nevertheless, we still were given these laws because by keeping them, by ruling on them, by learning them, by having a court system that abides by them, we create a relationship with Hashem. We bring Hashem into our own presence, and Hashem blesses us because He wants us to be ruling. So it's the idea is that the Mishpatim, the Shoftim, the Sanhedrin is the ideal model. And it's the ideal model in the sense that it's the divine truth, and that when we observe it and when we keep it, whether it's the Chukim, the, you know, like eating matzah, or whether it's the Mishpatim, like not stealing, by observing these commandments because they're Ratzon Hashem, we create a relationship with Hashem. And we cause Hashem to love us. But at the same time, there's a secondary structure. For when that ideal model breaks down, when that ideal model is not enough, we have another separate, but parallel structure in the secular and civilian rule that will allow us to legislate. So the Rav then really gives us a lot of flexibility. He recognizes that there's a role of religion, that religion is important. But he doesn't, unlike the Rambam, he sees that there's a separation, there's a distinction between the role of religion, the role of the religious courts, the role of the Sanhedrin and the priests, and the Nevi'im that we've spoken about, and the ruler himself. So the Rav's model then gives us this flexibility, gives us the ability to really begin a dialogue. Well, the Supreme Court wants to open the parking lot. I'm not going to reject that offhand in this model, in the Rav's model. The Rav's not going to reject that offhand. Because the Rav understands that there's an importance to secular government. There's a role to secular government. There's a need for secular government. So this really allows for a compromise that, as I said, it's just so badly needed in the discussion that's raging currently in contemporary Israeli society.
Well, until emancipation in Europe, you had
You had the idea is also, I think, expressed in the idea of takanot. We know that in medieval Jewish societies we had that idea of takanot takahal. We'll discuss them in later series. We have takanot takahal. We have, you know, different rules, different guidelines, different rulings that the kahal was allowed to establish outside of the halachic framework. The basis of takanot takahal recognizes that. Wait a second. Halacha doesn't necessarily cover this in a way that we need it to be covered. And therefore we're going to establish our own rules, our own minhagim, our own statutes that the community is going to have to abide by. And it's the same idea. It's the same recognition that even though halacha is a divine truth, and even though we want to accept it as divine truth, nevertheless, we pragmatically recognize that there are areas in which we have to make our own separate rulings, our own separate statutes, and the issue of takanot takahal is separate, but that's one understanding of the role of takanot takahal, and it's certainly the understanding that the Rav is talking about here in his discussion of the role of government.
Now, he's a lawyer, and his family is an individual.
And
he doesn't lie. So, you just, like, what do you have to say, like, briefly?
I think it's fascinating that the Iran actually goes into the discussion of that a Jewish civil government is not a contradiction. But if I understand what we're going, I don't want to claim to. But that a Jewish civil administration is not a contradiction to a rule of Allah. And there's one example that I think you've given tonight, which is that because of these procedural rules that a Sanhedrin is bound by, punishing murder is very difficult, whereas, if I understood correctly, a civil ruler could establish different jurisprudence for proving a capital case.
Exactly.
Which is a fascinating idea, but I think there's also something that predates this idea, and that's and the Chumash, there are instances of civil administration, which I don't think are part of Tariyag, but are referred to in the Chumash, and are clearly part of the structure of government. So the two examples, same thing, One is similar to Rav Shmuel, I don't remember where that is. The other thing is where Yoshua Kalev comes to Moshe and say, Adoni Klaei, put him in jail. So there's clearly accepted within halacha
a framework,
civil administration, which isn't part of Tayyat. It doesn't go say and go build a jail. We have this whole concept of an ir miklat, which is a radical idea. It's very, very different, but it's not a jail. It's not somebody, you know, somebody comes to Moshe and say throw a jail. You don't. I don't think you see. You know, number 350 in the Rambam say build a jail.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's the point we've been.
It says, there's a point. The idea of civil administration is not a contradiction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fantastic idea.
That's right. That's right. I think it's open.
Continues.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's open.
As a complete digression from the topic, you touched upon the point that